It hadn't been just since I came in the hospital, either. People first took to acting like I couldn't hear or talk a long time before that. In the Army, anybody with more stripes acted that way toward me. That was the way they figured you were supposed to act around someone looked like I did. And even as far back as grade school, I can remember people saying that they didn't think I was listening, so they quit listening to the things I was saying. Lying there in bed, I tried to think back when I first noticed it. I think it was once when we were still living in the village on the Columbia. It was summer. And I'm about 10 years old, and I'm out in front of the shack sprinkling salt on salmon for the racks behind the house, when I see a car turn off the highway and come lumbering across the ruts through the sage, towing a load of red dust behind it as solid as a string of boxcars. I watch the car pull up the hill and stop down a piece from our yard, and the dust keeps coming, crashing into the rear of it and busting in every direction, and finally settling on the sage and soapweed roundabout and making it look like chunks of red smoking wreckage. The car sits there while the dust settles, shimmering in the sun. I know it isn't tourists with cameras because they never drive this close to the village. If they want to buy fish, they buy them back at the highway. They don't come to the village because they probably think we still scalp people and burn them around a post. They don't know some of our people are lawyers in Portland. Probably wouldn't believe it if I told them. In fact, one of my uncles became a real lawyer, and Papa said he did it purely to prove he could, when he'd rather poke salmon in the fall than anything. Papa says if you don't watch it, people will force you one way or the other, into doing what they think you should do, or into just being mule stubborn and doing the opposite out of spite. The doors of the car open all at once, and three people get out, two out of the front and one out of the back. They come climbing up the slope toward our village, and I see the first two are men in blue suits. And the behind one, the one that got out of the back, is an old white-haired woman in an outfit so stiff and heavy it must be armor plate. They're puffing and sweating by the time they break out of the sage into our bald yard. The first man stops and looks the village over. He's short and round and wearing a white Stetson hat. He shakes his head at the rickety clutter of fish racks and second-hand cars and chicken coops and motorcycles and dogs. "Have you ever in all your born days seen the like? Have you now? I swear to heaven, have you ever?" He pulls off the hat and pats his red rubber ball of a head with a handkerchief, careful, like he's afraid of getting one or the other mussed up, the handkerchief or the dab of damp stringy hair. "Can you imagine people wanting to live this way? Tell me, John, can you?" He talks loud on account of not being used to the roar of the falls.